Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Chris Tobin takes us on a tour through how you get video onto your web stream. And yeah, I know you video guys know how to do this, but we're radio engineers. We may not know this. And so I'm learning so much on this episode. Takes us right through cameras, connections, boxes, and the software that it takes to then produce it and ship it out to Facebook and YouTube and wherever it needs to go. That's all coming up on This Week in Radio Tech. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcast Supply Worldwide, where it's Christmas for the caster. Save up to 61% whether you're a broadcaster, podcaster, voice caster, or everything caster at BSW. By the new Omnia Bolt audio processor, more processing power in one RU than others give you in three. And by the new Ruby console from Lavvo, with AutoMix smart mixing and a context-sensitive user interface. See Lavvo in your future at lavvo.com/twert. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Delighted to be here on this chilly, wet, rainy, for many folks, December day. It's the 21st. It's the shortest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere, the longest night of the year. Of course, you folks in the Southern Hemisphere, hey, glad you're here, but you have it the other way around. It's the longest day of the year, maybe one of your warmest days, too, although you probably still have some warmer days ahead, and shortest night of the year. So there you go. And since it's our longest night of the year, Chris Tobin is with us, and he's going to be engineering and providing lots of entertainment for folks at night while they're shopping and listening and driving and stuck in traffic or maybe relaxing at home. Chris Tobin, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. How are you?
I am doing well, Kirk. I'm on location. We're doing a broadcast this evening. It's going to involve audio for the radio program and then video for the web audience. So I'm just here at a venue getting things together. So the lights are coming out. As you can see, I've somewhat shadowed a little bit. And we can talk about it. But yeah, it's going to be fun.
Actually, the light looks striking and artistic. It looks good, actually.
It was just the last minute. I threw it up real quick. Apparently, the overhead lights turned off because of lack of motion, but then they won't come back on.
Ah, okay.
It's amazing. Things that some of these facilities do that just, I don't know.
Well, Chris Tobin, today you are our guest, and today Chris is going to walk us through some of the nuts and bolts of putting an event on a video stream, how they do that at WBGO, and make that happen. So, and then I'll be asking the dumb questions. How do you do this? How do you do that? We'll jump into it. So hang on. Our show is, what did I call our show today? Visual video for radio, something or other. Good gal. Hang on. I thought about this for a minute. Live video production for radio. There you go. Live video production for radio. We'll try to call it that or something like it. Maybe a better name will pop up. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech, episode 376, and the show's coming up, is brought to you by our friends at Lavvo, L-A-W-O, German company. So you say it Lavvo with a kind of a just a touch of a V, Lavvo, and it's lavvo.com/twert. So when you go there, add the /twert to the URL, lavvo.com/twert, and it'll take you right to the radio page where they have all their radio products. Now, you may have known Lavvo for years and years for making these huge audio consoles, the kind that go into big remote trucks and at concert venues big sound thing, or at the Olympics, at opera houses, things like that. Well, they've taken their expertise in these big mission critical consoles and mixing systems, also sound distribution and routing, and they've put that into small consoles for the radio business. Anywhere from just a few faders up to, you can still, pile a few of these together and get you a bunch of faders. But they've also taken their automation and what they understand about how to make consoles do things automatically and beautifully visually and automate processes that you may need to be have automated, and put that all together in packages for folks in the radio business. And that's why companies like the BBC and Canadian Broadcasting Corporation and NPR have, among many others, have chosen Lavvo to be their consoles, because they can do so much. Lavvo consoles also are able to do a lot of stuff with a simple interface on top and a lot going on under the hood. And right now on the screen you're looking, if you're watching our video playback, you are looking at the new Ruby console from Lavvo. And this is the console that really brings to bear this notion of a simple interface for the on-air staff to use that does so much under the hood, including auto mix. Now, that's a feature that, I mean, if you're in the sports radio business, if you are in the, if you're doing a, any kind of thing where you've got a bunch of different people talking, and they, maybe they want to step on each other. Maybe you got a host that needs to be able to step on any of them. Well, this is worth checking out. The auto mix feature from Lavvo, and it's in several other consoles, but it's also in this Ruby console. You can see on the Ruby console, the faders come in blocks of four. So you can have a small console or a really large console, anything in between. You can get all kinds of visual information on screen. And of course, as an engineer, you can set this up. Now, it comes out of the box just about ready to go. Doesn't need a whole lot of configuration, but you can also get under the hood, as I like to say, and configure a whole bunch of stuff under the hood. By the way, you know, if you've got a busy talk show going, you've got guests coming in and out, one of the other cool features is this feature where you can automatically set the level. And this is the input level to the mic preamp. So if you've got somebody comes in, sits down, and they're super loud and boisterous, and you know the kind of person I mean. Hey, and the sports world is full of them. Well, you have them while they're talking, just push a button on the console, and that will set the optimum level for the mic preamp. So they're not going to blow the preamp out, and they are going to be at the right level. Then you've got somebody comes in who's off mic, they're way back. They whisper, they don't talk very loud, maybe they're a little intimidated. That's okay. You can push that auto level set again, and it will set them up for the right level, the very best that it can, and get you a good level from any player, any talent, any person on microphone. This really works so well. You can have clocks on screen, timers on screen, access to social media feeds. You can have access to almost anything that's HTML. You can have it right there on the screen. Traffic reports, traffic cameras, hey, ski slope condition cameras, things like that. A lot of fun, a lot of utility, though, too, in the Lavvo Ruby console. Check it out. Go to Lavvo, Lavvo.com/twert. Click on the Ruby console, and you will see how radio never looked so good. Thanks a lot, Lavvo, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. All right, Chris Tobin, speaking of looks. So Chris Tobin and I were at a conference in Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago. Chris, you want to kind of recap what that conference was about visual radio?
Well, I guess the best way to put it is as the broadcast industry has changed, as we know, radio is not just about the audio of the theater of the mind. It's now being augmented by something we call video. And as a result, the visual symposium, visual radio symposium, I think New Bay Media is the first time they've done this. So this is not something you've missed years past. They thought time now is to let's look at the other options for bringing in, I'll call, non-traditional revenue. And radio stations, as we all know, you're doing it probably currently with Facebook and YouTube and Vimeo and everything else. The video augments, that's what I call it. It augments what you're doing or extends your brand. So do not think of it in terms of the radio portion is you're no longer doing radio. You still are, but now you're taking the pictures that people can't see and could not see in the past, and now you're bringing them to the foreground. And I think that's the best way to put it. That's the takeaway I have. And I know there were several folks on the panel that sort of said, well, no longer radio, we're multimedia, or we're this, we're that. The reality is you're still radio. You're just augmenting what you do at what you do best.
Okay. And we heard from a number of panelists, and I know there were two that I thought were particularly good. I mean, they all had good contribution to add. But who was the fellow that I think you had worked with before in New York City?
Oh, Mike Fox?
Mike, yes, M-I-C, yeah. Mike.
M-I-C, Mike Fox.
Yeah.
MS Broadcast, yes.
And he had what enthusiasm that Mike has, and some very definite ideas. And then the other guy was Dan McQuillan, who we've had as a guest on our show here before. We might want to get Mike Fox on as a guest if we can. And Dan McQuillan, we've had on before talking about visual radio and what he thinks is important, what he thinks, you know, as they say, moves the needle for listeners and viewers of visual radio. But both of them had this enthusiasm about doing it right. And I noticed that Mike Fox's ideas, Chris, were very much in line with your ideas about what works and what's probably not worth doing. Am I right about that?
Yeah. I mean, his goal was, you know, it's content, as the phrase goes, content is king. But you have to be providing content or creating program that the audience is going to consume, because that's what you do. So if your radio station is a urban format, right, urban dance, then whatever video you're doing on video vignettes should be based around that genre. You know, that's what you're doing. Don't find something else to do. Don't go to a local retailer and do something different. Just stick to that, but enhance what you have. And that's what he was talking about, though, where they have several folks on staff, videographers, where they'll take snippets of the day. Say the morning show has an artist comes in, and they're talking, they do stuff, they create snippets, and maybe a two-minute piece, three-minute piece, or longer, or shorter, and just highlight that throughout the day. So I usually call it peppering it throughout the day. And that way you create an experience and feeling that, hey, I missed out on something. I can catch it tomorrow because that is the show I listen to. Now I can see what they're talking about. So that it creates more. That doesn't cannibalize your product. I know there's a lot of folks in the past when I've worked at a few stations where they would say, well, if we do video, that's going to cannibalize the morning show or the afternoon show, the middays, and people aren't going to tune into the radio. The reality is they're going to still tune in. But now you're giving them something even more to do with it. You know, if you're in the office, you're not tuning into the radio. You're streaming it on the computer in the office. So it's still to them a radio consumption. It may not be a physical radio as we call it. But again, I always tell people when I talk to folks at a couple of seminars I've been at, think of yourself in terms of the listener. What did they perceive? And I can tell you that they don't think of radio as the box we think of it as. They don't think of it as a CHR format if you're talking one station or urban or spoken word. All they know is it's their favorite person, favorite songs, and it happens to be on a radio station they know as X. That's it. We go too far in the industry, you know, the inside baseball stuff. And that's what the symposium panel was talking about. Michael and the others were saying, hey, you know, think of it in terms of the end user, the consumer, you know, the person consuming it. What do they perceive it as? That's why a lot of times I think people in the industry get too caught up and say, oh, you know, you got to have 12 radio stations in the market in order to have saturation to make it work. It's like, no, the reality is you could probably make $1 million easily a day with one radio station that touched the audience the way they should. It created something that you can't get anywhere else.
I know so tell you what,
possible thing, but it's true.
One thing we've promised about this episode is we would, since you're there on site getting ready to do a broadcast tonight. Now this is going to be a long form broadcast, right? This isn't little snippets best of. You're doing a whole long form thing online?
Yes, this is a long form. It's a public affairs show that we do every month. It's hosted by one of the local television news anchors here in New Jersey. And the guest, well, it's the show is called Newark Today, and it's basically the mayor of Newark is one of the guests. And then we have several other guests that come on, and it's Q&A. And then we've been doing this in the studio for years. Never in a live audience situation. So for the last 4 months, we've been on the road and we've been doing these live, if you will, town hall type broadcasts, and it's been very successful. So we thought we'd continue it through the end of the year, which is now December. And that's what this is. So it's going to be a live broadcast, 8 p.m. this evening. You can watch on Facebook on the webpage, or you can listen to it on the radio. We have two different paths leaving the facility, and that's what it's going to be. Yeah, it's a stage. I'll turn the camera around. You'll see it.
So you'll have this on Facebook Live with video. First, let's cover just briefly what our radio engineer audience would be most familiar with, and that's the audio-only feed, because that's what we've always dealt with in radio. So you're doing a mic. You got mics, you got a mixer, and you probably got some kind of codec to get the audio back to the station, right?
Yes. Well, we have four microphones for the guests, and then the fifth microphone is for the host, and then that's mixed into a mixer. And that program mix has also, we also have a laptop running a Playit application. That's the name of the application, Playit. Think of it as a cart machine, software cart machine. Mm. And there's where the sounders, bumpers, promos, and all the different elements of the show are. And then that's fed into the mixer, and the program out goes into an audio codec and over IP back to the studio for broadcast. That's the one path. That's the primary path. That's our main piece. And that gets streamed out as well on the website and on the radio.
Well, I'm just curious, what brand of mics are you liking for this application? What mixer is it, and what codec is it?
Well, the microphones are SM58 Shures.
Good. Standard, real, yeah.
Well, we went with the dynamic mic simple because we're in a very loud room. I'm sure if you can hear it. But let's see.
Oh, yeah.
So condenser mics, which some people prefer to do, would probably be the wrong choice. We did try that the first time 5 months ago, and the preliminary sound check failed, so we chose to go with dynamics. The SM58s are fine. And then the mixer is a Mackie 16-channel mixer, standard Mackie mixer, nothing fancy.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the audio codec is a Musicam Suprema So that's connecting back to the studio. And we're running it at, I think I got it running at 320 kilobits. Yeah, 320 and MPEG 2, just for fun. And it works fine. The bandwidth leaving the facility here.
Yeah.
What's that?
Is this over public internet or a private line?
Well, it's the Rutgers University is hosting the internet service. Then it gets over to public and back to our side of things. So, yeah, it's public.
Okay.
It's totally public.
Okay.
But the nice thing is we arranged with them a dedicated IP address, dedicated service connection. I'll call it that. I mean, quality of service, whatever you want to call it. And and that's helped us a lot. So we're not just on the network with everything else. They sort of said, okay, we'll carve out a path for you. Think of it as like ISDN, a dedicated path out to the internet. After that, you're on your own. That's fine. At least, you know, the first mile we control. The middle we can't control. The last mile we have the studio. So that's how we got it working. And so far, for the last five broadcasts, we've been very fortunate. It's worked out very nicely.
Okay. So that takes care of the audio portion. Oh, I guess there's another Musicam Suprema at the other end, decoding it back to audio. Okay, cool.
Yes, exactly.
All right, good standard set up there. It's amazing you're doing. And if you got the bandwidth to do MPEG layer 2 at a high bit rate, it's great. What you don't want to do is do MPEG 2 at too low of a bit rate. It gets dirty.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you do AAC, HE, that's optimized for 56 kilobits, right? So why bother? I'll just go with MPEG 2, crank it up. 320 is fine. I mean, we all know that many, many years ago, if you had an audio automation system and you did music storage on it, you were doing MPEG 2 at 320. That was the standard.
Yeah.
And very few people had a problem with that. So I figured, why not do this? It's spoken word. It's mono. So I'm actually getting more out of it because I'm not really trying to do any summon difference. So it's actually more fun. And it sounds fine. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to know the difference. And that's what we're doing, and it's nice.
Okay, so for video, would you have an opportunity to turn your camera around and kind of give us a little view of what you're doing? Is that possible or not?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, hang on.
Now's the time to do it. Okay, Chris is turning his camera around. Yeah. We're going to learn about how Chris does this talk show, this Q&A. And, he's got some actual cameras there.
There's an actual camera. There we have two of them. These are Sony PXV70s, I believe it's the proper term. Very, very popular for documentary work and stuff and for what we're doing. And there's the second one over here.
Okay. And you'll have live camera operators to point at, what looks good.
Right? Yes, that'll be me. I'm the one doing both cameras and switching.
The lower third. Okay.
I should have mentioned the whole concept. This was a proof of concept the first time we did it. We didn't expect it to continue past the first broadcast because we thought it'd be just chaos. And it turned out to be very successful, so we're going through with it, and we're enjoying it. So 2018, there'll be a whole new approach that makes sense now that we've got our several broadcasts and workflows under our belts. Now we know what to do. So if you look into the distance, that's the stage. There are four chairs for the guests. To the right-hand side is the podium for the host. And as you can see, our logo for the projector. And I don't know if I can do it. Well, behind that column is where the Mackie mixer and the audio engineer will be for the podcast.
Okay. Okay. Now, it looks like there's HDMI connections from the camera back to wherever they go. Is that what that connection is?
Yes. So when we did the proof of concept, we didn't have all the hardware in place yet because of the cost, and we just weren't certain what to expect. So these cameras produce both SDI out and HDMI. So we use the HDMI output, and then we go into an Asia card, or two of them, two Asia cards for HDMI to USB 3, into an i5 Dell computer, and we're stressing it. I mean, you definitely need to have a hefty machine when you're doing this stuff. So,
hey Chris, I'm sorry. I was actually yapping and not keeping up. What model are the cameras? I'm going to put links in the show notes to these. So these are
the Sony PXV 70s, I believe, or PXW-70.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. When people see them, they know what they are. They're very popular, well known.
Yeah.
They're very good.
And, by the way, if you record on the camera itself, is it a tape or an SSD type of camera?
That will be an SD card.
SD
class
card, 10
or higher, or class 6 or higher. Yeah, so the two camera shots. So one camera is head-on for the guest and ISO shots of guests, and this camera to the left in the screen is actually I keep on the host. So basically I have the ability to switch between two camera positions so I can set up the second camera. So when the host is talking, I can now move to the camera two, get that position on a guest who may be about to answer a question, and then I can fade back. So that's the reasoning and the idea behind that.
All right. So you mentioned now from the cameras, HDMI cables to an Asia box, and that's AJA. Is that correct?
That is correct. Hang on. Let's see if I can do this without blowing everything up. Hopefully I can make this right.
So no, our friends, I'm just starting to become familiar with some of the stuff myself, and our friends at Broadcast Bionics, when they do a multi-camera setup, they're doing it into a Blackmagic rack mount box. So this is an Asia UTAP.
Yes, I have a Blackmagic as well here. So I'm using both. I have a couple. I've been using the Asia because it just a friend of mine gave it to me a while back. I tried it. It worked. It's been working very well. The form factor is ideal. As you can see, it fits in the palm of your hand. There's my hand. So there's the USB 3 on the one side.
Yeah. USB 3. Okay.
That's it.
How's it powered? By the USB?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Yep. So that gives you video in a format that's on USB. And so that way, if you plug whatever laptop you plug it into, or computer you plug it into, a lot of programs recognize USB video sources. Even Skype does, right?
Yes. Yes. It's just same protocols USB cameras do. That's basically it. But it gives you the ability, and they also have a UTAP for SDI. So SDI is higher bandwidth data rate. So I didn't do that because the computer I'm running into, I'm using the onboard USB 3 card ports. I don't recommend that. I have a computer at home where I have a separate card that has individual controllers for each USB port. Very important to realize. Most computers, like this desktop, are sharing the bus. So the controller is maybe one controller doing two ports or maybe three. So it gets a little dicey. So I have at home an actual dedicated PCI E card that has four ports, and each one has its own controller. And I can tell you, huge difference in performance. And even that machine.
You know, we learned that a long time ago. I don't think we talked about it, but even me doing this show with the MacBook Pro laptop that I use, I used to try to combine my external sound box, which came out USB, and my camera, which was USB, combine them into one box and then send that to a USB port on the laptop. And that wasn't so good. We'd get all kinds of, you know, weird things going on. And so I ended up separating. So my camera goes into one USB port on one side of the laptop and the audio goes in the one on the other side. I assume they're on different controllers because they're on, you know, they're 13 inches apart on the laptop, right? So they're probably different controllers. And that seems to work. And as you can see right here, you get pretty good video and audio from me with, you know, no USB related problems anyway.
Yes. I mean, there have been a lot of machines that still have USB ports, say on the front of the machine, that sort of a shared port. The rear connectors on the chassis may be part of an actual controller. There's a few things you have to look at the specs. You'll see early days, they were all shared for the longest time.
But
nowadays, I think the manufacturers have realized they need to sort of break out the resources. So it makes sense.
Okay, so from the Asia's USB, you said USB 3?
Yes,
okay.
USB 3.
And your computer, I'm sorry, this one may be shared, you may or may not, but they're all on board on the motherboard, right?
At the moment, they are. Because it's a small form factor PC, the PCI card that I have will not fit in the slot. So that was the last one. But again, this was a proof of concept. It's actually working. So 2018 will move toward more beefed up and, you know, more dedicated setup.
So is there now you're about to get to telling me about the software that you use, and we'll do a commercial break here shortly before we really get into that. Is there any intervening software between the USB ports where the cameras come in and your mixer? How about your audio mixer? How does that get into this computer?
Well, the audio mixer program out is fed to the mic inputs on the camera, which then gets embedded into the HDMI.
So you feed it back out to the camera?
Yes, out to the camera.
Okay.
So this way I keep everything in sync and just bring it through.
What if your Mackie board was one of those, and I've got a Behringer that's got a USB port on it, so it can act like an outboard sound card from a PC. Could you run the audio in that way? And if so, would it be in sync?
You can do that. It should be in sync. Remember, when you're doing video, it is a resource-intensive data. So every time you plug something into your computer, it's going to take resources and clock cycles. I personally would prefer probably keeping the audio into the HDMI path, bring it in, strip it out in the software, and do it that way. Because when you start loading up the machine, unless you're running a real powerhouse and you're talking, you know, if you do it right, a good machine would probably be starting at around $3,500 to do it.
Wow. Wow.
Because you remember video, anybody who does video knows that, you know, well, if you're an editor, you know, trying to edit, you know, 1080p, it takes a lot of resources. Now move to 4K and forget it.
Cool.
You're redoing everything.
Speaking of, are your cameras 4K or 1080?
They're doing 1080, but they are 4K okay. capable. We do have the software in for it. The firmware is in there.
But you're spitting out at 1080. That's fine for your streaming purposes.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah. Trust me. Yeah. There's no way anybody would know the difference between 1080p and 4K. And I doubt this machine would would croak. It would just come to a halt.
Okay.
Yeah.
So before we go to break, just to make sure I understand, there's no other intervening software except drivers, I suppose, between your USB ports and the software that the application you use to switch cameras and do all the fancy schmancy stuff that we're about to get to in a minute.
That's correct. Well, the Blackmagic box has a driver set. The Asia did not. I think it just uses a default, whatever is the name for that default USB protocol. But yeah, it's very straightforward.
Okay. All right, cool. All right, Chris is next going to carry us through the application that does the camera previewing and lets you do switching, lets you do some graphics, some lower thirds. I guess it has a little bit of a DVE, that's digital video effects. And then we'll talk about, you know, what the output is, what you can, how you can record, you know, the straight video, the high quality feed, and then what it has available, what software nowadays lets you do to put a program into Facebook Live or perhaps upload it to YouTube Live or any of the other kind of formats. That's just fascinating that you can do several at once. You want to do the one that's going to be best for your audience. So we'll get to that in a minute. And then Chris and I are also going to talk about, he doesn't know it yet, we're going to talk about a few other little hardware goodies. I've got a few things laying around here I just want to talk about with Chris and get his thoughts on them because I know he uses them. So I want to, and I haven't yet, so I know he's going to tell us all about it. Hey, our show, This Week in Radio Tech, is This Week in Television Tech, just about TV tech for radio broadcasters, is brought to you in part by our friends at Broadcast Supply Worldwide. And I really appreciate them sponsoring the show at Broadcast Supply Worldwide, bswusa.com. Got two things to talk about. First of all, the Christmas for the Caster sale, where you can save up to 51%, whether you're a broadcaster, podcaster, voice caster, or everything caster, you can take advantage of the lowest prices of the year on a wide range of gear. They got microphones, Henry Super Relays. They have these fantastic Audio Technica headsets. They have reporters mics that are on sale. Incredible Yellowtech microphone. Podcast package deals with systems from Tascam, their US 42 mini studio, for example, or the US 32 mini studio. My favorite standalone mic processor, because it's so simple and so works so well. It's the one I'm using right now. It's the DBX 286S. S stands for silver face, so I can see it in the dark under my desk. And and more microphones for sale on sale. The Electrovoice RE320, for example, is on sale. Also the AirTools voice processor, that is on sale too. So lots of good sales going on right before Christmas. It's not too late to order. In fact, you could even order today. If you're listening or watching This Week in Radio Tech Live, it isn't too late. They can get it on a plane tomorrow. No, tonight. Get on a plane tonight. You can have it tomorrow. Now, the other thing I want to mention about BSW is that BSW USA is the distributor for the HDV mixer. And the HDV mixer does a lot of the same things that Chris is going to be telling us about with the vMix product. So I was talking to John Lynch at BSW just about an hour ago, talking about, well, what, for a broadcaster, what's the real advantage of the HDV mixer? Now, we've done a spot or two on the show about the HDV mixer. I think the benefit for broadcasters is that they have so many different packages available. You just buy a package. It comes with the cameras. It comes with the computer, either the laptop or the tower computer. It comes with, you know, the cards that you need. In other words, it's ready to work out of the box. You don't have to try to mix and match things and make a mistake buying a computer that's not powerful enough. And they have all these different sizes of packages, anywhere from about $1,000 up to $17,000. They have packages all in between with different numbers of cameras, different ways to control the mix, the video switching, the audio mix. You just bring all this stuff into either the laptop or the tower computer, and it's ready to roll as far as putting out to any of the social media platforms. By the way, maybe you have an external video switcher already. Maybe you've been delving into this world of video for radio. No problem. The output of that video switcher should just plug right into the HDV mixer. At the very most, you would just use a converter from Asia, like Chris was showing, or Blackmagic, and convert that into USB to work with the HDV mixer. There are so many packages available. You really want to get a quote. You want to find out what you need for your station, for what you want to do. Do you want to broadcast shows like what Chris is doing tonight with city council members and guest speakers? Or do you want to do a sports broadcast? Do you want a football game, a basketball game, or like John Lynch does, this high-speed boat racing on rivers and lakes? Just amazing stuff. Well, your HDV mixer can do any of that, but be sure you get the right package. So what you want to do is call BSW USA, and their phone number is 800-426-8434. Now, you can write that down or memorize it, put it in your little black book or your electronic Rolodex, or you can just go to bswusa.com, and the toll-free number is right there, 800-426-8434. John Lynch is great to talk to about these things. The guy is just amazing, and he uses it. He's a sports broadcaster himself, so he can help you decide what exactly to get. And you're going to be happy with it. It's got graphics built in. You can do picture in picture, side by side, you know, double boxes, all this kind of stuff. You can even bring in guests on Skype. Yeah, that's pretty cool. You can also have pre-recorded video in the computer and play that back in a box or full screen, put graphics over that. So it's really a full production package that's just right for radio stations to use to get going in the world of online video to enhance the listeners and viewers experience. Thanks a lot to BSW USA for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech, and their website, bswusa.com. All righty, Chris, let's jump back on it here with the software that you're using. I think you said it was called vMix. Yeah.
Yes. vMix.
Tell me about what vMix is.
Well, vMix is basically a video switcher, digital effects, streaming. If you choose to stream from it, you can stream, I think, two streams at once, maybe more. They now are NDI compatible, so you can do that NewTek digital interface. I think it's called NewTek. I hope that's right.
NDI, yeah, I saw NewTek at the NAB show a couple of years ago when they were introducing, really starting to push NDI. And, you know, our favorite redhead who explains this, Kiki Stockhammer, was there. Everybody should know Kiki from the video toaster days, because she was, she was the pitch girl for the video toaster. So that's right. tell me what is NDI? Do I have to know what that is?
Well, NDI is an option for you to bring your video and audio across an IP network, IP packets. So the two cameras I have here could easily be doing, if they had the interface, a LAN interface, IP NDI protocol, just like you'd say LiveWire, across the network back to my computer. And then I can call it up as a source. It's the same principle. So when you think of that and think of what you could do with that, there's a lot of opportunity. So, you know, SDI has a distance limitation. HDMI does. But if it's an IP domain, maybe you don't have a distance limitation anymore. Now you just have a network capacity and handoff as to where you put it.
Yeah. Okay. So I remember NDI is designed to be a low latency video over IP standard.
Right. Yes, it is designed. The protocol itself is designed for low latency. So if your network is properly configured and you have the switches where they should be, yes, it'll be low latency. Now, if you decide to take it outside the premises or off the WAN, you know, outside the enterprise beyond your boundaries, then there'll be latency. But you should know that anyway going into that. But as far as in the studio, physically in the plant like I am right here, it's fine. It would work just fine.
So in vMix, what's your interface? What is the person using vMix? What are you seeing on the screen all at once?
Well, let me show you that. I guess this is the best way to bring this around. Let's see if I can do this.
I didn't know if your cable was long enough to get that done.
Well, I'm actually at the computer itself. Let's see.
So I'm hoping you see a couple of preview screens, so you can preview the cameras, right?
Yeah. Okay. Can you see it? Is it coming out okay? Am I shaking the camera too much?
Shaky there. Tell us what's on the screen.
Okay, what's on the screen on the left-hand side is a traditional preview screen. So if you're familiar with video switches, Grass Valley, Chiron, the whole bit, you know, the preview is on the left. Program out is on the right. So on the right now is a camera, live camera shot of the studio stage, the venue stage. And then below is lower third that I've created. Now that lower third, if you look at it, watch it carefully, and if I do this, you notice the image, a graphic goes away.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So,
And then I can take away the graphic. Whoop, there we go. And we could put somebody else in there if we choose. Oh, look, the mayor. The mayor's name.
Okay.
But notice the logo bug stays there as I choose.
So in your lower left, you've got a number of little preview screens. Some of them are previewing lower third graphics.
That's correct. So the lower half of the screen, the below the fold, if you will, on the far left is the actual camera input using the UTAP. The other black screens that you see are the actual effects, or the overlays. And each of them can be labeled. So I have one that's called Run of Show Bug. The bug is, as we know in the business, is the little logo that goes in the lower corner of the screen, left or right. Mm-hmm. That's what is traditionally known as the bug. So this particular screen, this one here on number two that I'm moving the mouse over, is my Run of Show. That's the one that's always up. The bug is always up. Then I have another one called the Host Bug Overlay, which is what you're looking at right now, because I have an overlay. So if I have no overlays, just a screen, then we do the bug.
Okay.
And there we go.
Okay.
See, the bug has just appeared. But now if I do an overlay with a graphics name, with a name in it, the bug is in the right place because I position it that way. So now you see the show name, location, it's live, and then the radio station bug. And these are all graphics you built in advance. And I can take it away. Take it away. And I could go this. Oops. Go like that. And then we can go like this. Boop. And then I could bring back my show bug. Like so.
Now I'm confused by one thing, Chris. You're in Newark there, and I don't think there's a beach with horses running. What am I looking at?
Well, no, that's correct. So on the left side is the preview. The other camera, I didn't have a chance to finish running the cable, so I couldn't show you the two cameras. So what I'm showing you is when you transition between. There we go. Video. So I can, and now I can go back to my Run of Show bug. So this way I can keep the logo up. And I'm running a video. This video could be something we produced early on before the show or during the show. And then when I come back, I want to come back. I can just do a fancy graphic if I choose. Whee! Like so.
Gotcha. So that's part of the DVE if you want to do digital.
That would be the digital effects. Right.
You've got things like that. Right.
So you have all the different choices. You have Koala Bear, you can see, or you can fade back.
And it looks like you've got an audio mixer in the lower right. Is that it?
Now, the lower right-hand side is the audio section, and it is an audio mixer. So you have the output of the software, the output controls, the actual inputs to the software, and then the devices or the mechanisms that the audio could be coming in on. So as you can see, I have two sources of audio. One is the video camera itself, the HDMI video, and the second source is the actual the Windows media file, the video. Now, say I just want the video only, no audio, I turn off the speaker. You toggle it on and off. But the speaker here is turned on always because the M means the input audio goes to the master. This is my camera audio, in this case, the program show audio. So no matter what you see on the top, so if I change, I still will have audio coming from the camera. So somebody could be narrating this video as they're watching it. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to do anything more than just simply change the video source because the audio is already being routed to the master bus, program bus, whatever you want to call it.
And you're already mixing the video the audio on a separate mixer, the different mics.
Yes, that's exactly. If that wasn't the case, then we'd have another mixer in here. Each microphone would come up in the screen in this lower section that below the fold, the little black boxes would be audio sources. So if I want to add an input, I'd select add input, go to the screen that says audio in, select the device. I'll just pick something out of goofiness. Hopefully it won't crash anything on us. And try that. Because it's not there, won't do it. But basically, you'd call up the device, and then you'd select it, and it would appear in the boxes below, and that would be your mixing, and you can set your levels accordingly.
Do you know how many audio sources you could bring in at the same time in vMix?
You're limited by, I think, the horsepower of the machine, and I think you could do, I think, up to 10 or more. I haven't tried it. I haven't looked at it, because most of the stuff I do is typically 6 or 7 at max. So they have, and the vMix has several levels of software choices. So you have to sort of look at which package you want to go with.
Okay.
And you know, and if you want to do like we're doing with the vMix call, which is a WebRTC selection, you can actually add that input by doing a video call, and you can set up the vMix call. I think I got that.
Whoa. Yeah. So, okay. So, you, all right. So you can bring in a video or audio and video. You could bring in of what we're doing right now, because you and yes. I are both connected to the GFQ network, not over Skype. We used to use Skype exclusively. Now there are other options. We typically use something called vMix call, which uses the WebRTC protocol in a browser to That's make correct. This work. And this is a built in to, of course it is, the same name, same company, into the vMix video editing software or video switching software.
Okay. Yes. So essentially, you can do everything in this one setup.
Okay. So you could bring me in during the middle of their show to ask some nutty questions.
That's correct.
No, you could. Not, it ain't going to happen, but you could.
I could, yes. What's nice about right. this whole package, this whole approach, is it's integrated mm-hmm. into one platform. Whereas mm-hmm. years past, if you wanted to bring all these different sources in, and those of us who have done video work, and I know the TV engineering audience knows this all too well, you had separate packages, devices, mechanisms, you know, cables everywhere, boxes on a shelf, you know, the whole bit. Now, with the right software, with the right hardware, it can be done in one fell swoop. And it's a good thing. Or it could be a bad thing if you don't pay attention and do it right. Like this setup I have here, trust me, if I go beyond what we're doing right now, the machine would just croak. It would die.
Yeah.
So invest in the hardware, and after that, you can be as creative as you like.
Yeah, you could get a stronger machine and do more. Hey, Chris, tell you what, I know you got to go in 4 to 5 minutes. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to hear from about something we haven't heard from in a long time. I've been getting a lot of buzz at my employer, at the Telos Alliance, about AM processing. It's been a hot topic for some reason for the last few days. So I thought we'd address the most amazing AM processor that I know of. And that is what it's, well, the Omnia 9 is there, but the Omnia 7 is too. And it's at a heck of a value. We're going to watch a really quick minute and a half video about the Omnia 7 AM. And watch for a cameo appearance from me at the WSM transmitter site. And then we're going to come right back. And Chris, I want you to finish up by telling us about encoding for the different platforms like YouTube Live and Facebook Live. Just give us an idea, a little look at how you make that happen. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Suncast, let's roll that Omnia 7 AM video and we'll be right back in a minute and a half.
Advances in audio cleanup are making FM sound cleaner than ever. Now, AM stations can enjoy the same clean, clear, and powerful audio processing. Meet the Omnia 7 AM, a feature-rich AM audio processor engineered to clean up source material and the first new processor in years dedicated to AM broadcasting. While others are using old and outdated technology in their processors, the Omnia 7 AM delivers the powerful, clear, and precise Omnia signature sound that's the first choice for top stations worldwide. Undo audio technology and the amazing declipper from the Omnia 9 and Omnia 7 FM are proven to bring overprocessed audio back to life. These exclusive technologies are perfect for AM broadcasting too. Omnia 7 AM's dry voice detector detects speech and applies appropriate processing for clearest possible voice quality. Next, it's a three-stage wideband AGC with adjustable sidechain equalization and program-dependent 2 to 5 band AGCs and limiters. But the big deal for AM is the final clipper. It's an exclusive psychoacoustic-controlled distortion masking clipper. It analyzes and masks distortion perceptible to the human ear, leaving only clean, clear audio. It offers the same distortion masking performance as the FM version, but redesigned for AM. Plus, the Omnia 7 AM output delivers up to 150% maximum positive peaks. Omnia 7 AM includes the full Omnia toolbox, including real-time audio analyzer, oscilloscope, and FFT displays. And every aspect of Omnia 7 AM processing is remote controllable in real time with remote audio monitoring. Omnia 7 AM, the new premium AM audio processor that's surprisingly affordable.
Affordable is right. I own the FM version of that. And I've got another Omni on our AM station, but amazing stuff. Check it out at telosalliance.com and then click on Omnia. And thanks so much to the Telos Alliance. Also Leif Clayson, Cornelius Gould, Frank Foti, the whole team there, the whole Omnia team, for making such awesome products that I get to talk about and use. All right, Chris Tobin, in the remaining few minutes we have left, why don't you show us what you have to do to take this video signal and audio and make it appear for the masses?
All right, let's do it this way. Let's have some fun with this. Here we go. We'll go back to our screen. I'll be the Vanna White holding the camera, showing you everything. So what we do is we go down to the stream icon, and there's a little, what do you call it, sprocket. Click on the sprocket for configuration. And as you can see, it brings up destination for your profile for streaming. And then you click on the destination pull-down menu, and all of a sudden you have all these various methods you can stream out to. Ustream, YouTube, Livestream, Wowza Cloud, Stream Shark, Periscope, Twitter, Facebook, Cloud Media Group. There's a whole slew of them. Or you have a custom RTMP server, and Facebook does RTMP, so you may decide to do that choice rather than logging into your particular account. As you can see on the right-hand side is the login, and then down below is the quality that you choose. So since we have lots of bandwidth here, we usually go with the 2.5, the 5 meg setting. I forget where it is. It's in here somewhere. So you can do H.264, 720p, 2.5 meg. You do MP3 audio. You can do Twitch service for their connections. Periscope has their standards. There's a few things. So you can pick and choose however you'd like to go. That's pretty much it. And then the application, you could do the FFmpeg or the Flash Media Live encoder. You have those choices of application. And that will dictate sometimes, is dictated by the service you're going to. Some places only allow that. Others do not. And that's pretty much it. And you can view the status of your connection once you're up and running. You have log files you can check. There's a few things. And that's as easy. It's as simple as that. And I believe you can do up to 2 or 3 streams simultaneously. Now, word of caution, and I do this because I've worked with some folks who do this every weekend. Try not to stream and produce your video product on the same machine. Okay. We're going back to that resource issue. You're streaming. Your streaming needs a lot of resources to make sure it's steady, error checking, and then you have your video work and you're doing production overlays and everything else. That machine best be very, very powerful. Your best bet would be use a separate machine just to stream out. Think of it like a network operation. You have a production distribution point, a production ingest, and then you have the production outgoing, and that's the way to look at it.
How would you connect two machines together? Let's say you had a one PC running vMix to do your production, another PC running perhaps vMix, just the encoding part there. How would you connect
them? You could do NDI. You can do the old-fashioned way, which is a hardware solution. Have a hardware card, video card out to a video card in on your other machine. There's a couple of ways to do it. Yeah.
Okay.
And again, the goal is the goal is here is not to be doing it on the cheap. The goal is to produce something that is professional, reliable. People want it, and they come back for it more. So you make money at it. If you're going to cheap out and say, "Well, I should be able," I've met many folks. I've gone through this issue. I should be able to do it all on one machine. Why not? I was like, "That's not the question. That's not the workflow. The idea is you're producing a show. You want a flexibility producing it. You know, in television, there was a reason why you had every control room had a certain layout." If everyone remembers, there's the front row for the technical director. And then there's the switcher in front. On the right-hand side was the audio guy. Then behind that was one set of directors. Then it was another guy. Oh, the digital effects. Can I have the Chiron? Can I have slides? Can I have who's in, and everybody had a layer. Now you can do all of that in one machine. The one part you shouldn't give up on or compromise on is how you get it out to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. The transmitter was typically not in the same room that the producers were
exactly.
The technical director. The Well, I know
his reasons for that, but it's true. I only say this because I 2 years ago I was working on a project in Philadelphia. We were doing live streaming and all kinds of crazy stuff, and the production folks we worked with insisted that everything should be able to be done on one machine. This is ridiculous. I don't want to do it the old-fashioned way. And I said to him, I said, look, what you call old-fashioned was state-of-the-art, okay? Today, state-of-the-art is now doing all the production in one machine, but distribution, or streaming we'll call it, should still be offloaded to something else that's dedicated. Because remember, when you have dedicated devices doing dedicated operations, are those the ones that have the 99.5 nines reliability? Yes, that's correct. They do. But if you take the device that doesn't have that capability and decide to make it 5 nines like a desktop computer, what happens? Blue screen, me freezing up in video like we did before, things like that.
And if you're offered a software update, don't do it before the show.
Don't do any software updates. Turn off all those auto features. It's just annoying.
Chris, thank you so much for taking us on a tour with that. I feel like I understand this much, much better now. And maybe I even better understand what's going on at our network, the GFQ network, where I believe vMix is the software that's being used to produce this very show. Am I right?
And you're right. And the GFQ network is doing it exactly the way it makes sense. And I've worked with those guys for 5 years now, if not more. And we are what you're watching right now. You're seeing us on the vMix system, the production machine it's known as. And all the elements of the show happen are on the production machine. But then this output of this machine is handed off to two other machines. What are they doing? That's right. They're streaming out to CDNs, both audio, video, and other stuff. Everywhere this network is appearing, there's a machine dedicated to getting that video and audio to that destination. That's why the GFQ network is reliable, up and running, and always there. Otherwise, if the production machine and streaming was being done and the production machine needed to be rebooted because we decided to change something, that means you lose everything else. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you have the streaming machine set up properly, you can go to a slide or a predetermined video and just throw that into the stream, while you're fixing something. Oh, yeah, you forgot about that part.
Good advice. Chris, I know you got to run. It's 5 after, man. You got a broadcast coming up, so... Thank you.
Yeah.
And you got to eat at some point. You got to eat.
I'll be doing that shortly. That's first.
Okay. Good deal. Hey, we got to run. Thank you for all that help. And you can bet that we'll look at this again when there's new technology, the technology changes. We're probably going to take a good look at the HDV mixer package on a future episode too. We're going to get one of the developers of that we radio folks, we radio engineers, can become very familiar with how this stuff works so that when we're asked to do it, or maybe if we go suggest that the station does this, could be new revenue streams. Hey, you know what? I talk to so many station owners and managers where they tell me that half or almost half of their revenue is now non-traditional revenue. That means not spots. So yeah, you want to feed the mouths and pay the employees and keep the lights on, you got to be looking at non-traditional revenue. That is for sure. All right, Chris, thanks a lot, man. Have a great weekend and Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you, too. Have a great weekend and we'll catch up with everybody next week.
Yeah, we'll see you next week. And Chris Tarr may be on the show next week with some with some ideas. Here's what they are. Engineer friends, if you didn't get what you want for Christmas, Chris Tarr will tell you where to get the cool stuff. what you wanted to have. That's the idea of the show. All right. Hey, thanks very much to Suncast for switching and producing today's show. Thanks very much, Suncast, and also Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network, where you'll find lots of other fine podcasts, including What the Tech and Matt Men. We got to go. Thanks to our sponsors. Please patronize them and watch for the show notes. We'll have some things in there. I'm Kirk Harnack. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.